Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Live from the University of Minnesota, you are listening to Radio K's CultureQ, the Twin Cities Arts and Cultural Program providing you the stories of Minnesota that you won't hear anywhere else. I'm your host, Matt Curtis, and thank you so much for joining us. Our society is driven by media, and tonight we're indulging in it and appreciating what Minneapolis and St. Paul have to offer on a given weekend. Amy Friedman tries to sing karaoke, I visit a thriving film festival, and Parker Lemke learns about the significance of one of the most revered comic book heroes. And it starts right now, Radio K's Culture Cube.
I mean, we're up to 40,000 attendees over the 17 days. We've increased the number of films from just under 175 to over 250.
Koreans are generally a lot more conservative, and so they're not going to openly express themselves. You know, even though they may have confidence, they would rather do it in a more intimate setting, like a karaoke room, norebang.
Spider-Man's kind of the everyman character. He represents the common man. He struggles against great odds, but still has everyday problems. Can't make the rent, has girl problems, all those kind of...
In the past couple of years, Korean culture has gone global with a worldwide trend called Hallyu. You may not understand what they're saying, but who can help falling in love with Korean boy band Big Bang, and not to mention Super Junior, who we're listening to right now, actually. And the chances are that your friends might have made you dance to Gangnam Style at some point in the last year. Now producer Amy Friedman reports on another part of this trend that brings you one step closer to living out your K-pop fantasies.
At about 10 p.m., the restaurant side of Hoban, a Korean restaurant in Eagan, Minnesota, is dying down. But as the lights turn off, Fred Huang walks through a door to face four rooms where neon lights are blaring, sake is on the table, and Miley Cyrus is at full blast. It is the perfect time of night for norebang.
And norebang technically translates to song room. Nore is song and then bang is room. We wanted to bring this to Minnesota because when we started our business here, actually, there was no norebang. There was no type of karaoke.
Of course, we had karaoke in Minnesota, but not like this. Norebang takes place in private rooms where the only people who see you drunkenly belting out Sweet Child of Mine are your friends. Karaoke is huge in Asia. In America after work, you might head to happy hour, but in Korea, you go to norebang.
You know, norebang in Korea is all over. It's like every block is going to have like three norebangs.
Huang has tried American-style karaoke, and he's convinced that we're doing it all wrong.
It's kind of like you're just watching a performance. When you go to an American-style karaoke where someone goes up on stage and sings in front of everybody. But I feel that the norebang or any other Asian type of karaoke is different because it's more interactive. You are, you know, everyone is partaking in the singing and, you know, dancing or whatever, you know, the entertainment.
Nate, you are up. Nate is up. Nate's up. Ernie is on deck and Allie's in the hole.
This is the sound of American-style karaoke. It's in a cafe just off of the U of M campus called the Acadia. Joel Stitzel has been hosting karaoke here Wednesday nights for years. And yes, sometimes he has to deal with the kinds of stuffy performances that Huang fears.
Well, some people take it very seriously, and some people are very particular about the backing tracks that they use, and they have keys in which they feel more comfortable, so they want to shift the audio to suit their voice, and that's fine. There are things that the intense singers like to sing intensely, and that's just how they interact with it.
But tonight, the karaoke isn't like a performance. It's intimate.
And then there are people who, it's their artistic expression. That's sort of how I started doing it myself. It's just, well, this is fun. I like music, and I like variety, and I don't think I can sing all that well, but I think there are a lot of people who don't consider themselves performers, but know that, you know, they love music and they want to participate too.
The beauty of karaoke is that you don't have to be Steve Perry to sing one of the most requested songs, Don't Stop Believing. It offers the general public a way to express themselves with music. And this is where Hwang thinks our two cultures part. How we express ourselves and where we express ourselves.
Koreans are generally a lot more conservative, and so they're not going to openly express themselves the way that they would want to if it was in front of a ton of people. You know, even though they may have confidence, they would rather do it in a more intimate setting, like, a karaoke room, norebang.
In Korea, how you express yourself can depend on what room you're in.
There's different kinds of bang, like that. Bang means room, and so there's like even like game bang, or like where, you know, you play like games. There's like board game rooms, there's video game rooms, and you know, there's like places where you go to just like watch movies, like a DVD room.
These rooms mean more than freedom of expression. They can also mean escape.
It's kind of rooted into the culture of living with your family until you go off and get married, and you know, you're still going to be living with your family, even if you're like in your 20s or 30s. There's all these accommodations set up so that people can go out of the house and, you know, do whatever they would like, and instead of having to bring everyone over to their house. And, you know, kind of the house is more private and personal.
In the middle of Minnesota, surrounded by a different culture and different social rules, Do-Re-Mi offers another kind of escape, a cultural escape. For many Korean Americans, it's a tiny haven of Korean food, Korean friends, and Korean music. For Culture Q, I'm Amy Friedman.
Live in studio, we have Amy Friedman.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I am so good. I'm so excited to talk about my story.
I'm excited to hear about it.
Yeah. Well, so I was really excited. I've been to China. I lived there for about 6 months, and I was just struck when I was there by how huge karaoke was, like nothing I'd seen here. And again, where the format that I tried to describe in there where they're like in these little rooms and you just have your own little private thing. They bring you like fruit and drinks, and it's really nice. And then I was really surprised when I found this little place hiding in Eagan, Minnesota, of all places, that just perfectly replicates these norebangs.
It's exactly the same.
Yeah, honestly, it was really surprising. And I think that was part of the selling point, was that they so perfectly replicate it, because I think a lot of people who come over here, they kind of miss that experience, and like again, the American karaoke doesn't quite capture what they remember from karaoke in Korea or China or Japan, and so they just really perfectly replicate it. It's very funny. They have like these neon lights, and it's kind of dark in there, and there are these like luxurious couches that you sit on, and it's a lot of fun. I'm going to go for my birthday this year, I decided.
Just to relive the Chinese days.
Right. there's a lot of nostalgia packed into those little rooms now for me, so.
No, I totally feel you. I mean, like, I can definitely see why they would be so attached to it. I mean, speaking as an immigrant myself, you know, whenever I go to Brit's pub, I'm like, oh, they have Heinz beans, you know? It's like, it's just like little things like that, and it really kind of creates a sense of nostalgia, like you were saying.
Right, and I was interested to find that it is rooted it is kind of rooted in cultural differences for some people. Or the guy who I spoke to thought so.
Absolutely. So what is your go-to karaoke song?
Well, I actually, I'm a very, very bad singer, like a shockingly bad singer, and which sometimes is okay, but usually I like listening. I'm very good at cheering, but sometimes when I get really brave, I go with Baby Got Back, which is kind of a cliche, but I stand by it every time. It's been since high school for me.
Be honest, you know all the words?
No, never. sometimes it's an utter failure. But another interesting thing I learned is that the most popular song that they have there is still Gangnam Style.
Really?
Yeah. They just love Gangnam Style. It's the most requested. And again, Don't Stop Believing is for Stitzel, the other karaoke host that I interviewed.
And I understand he was the first music director at Radio
Yes,
K.
He was the very first.
It's crazy.
It was really funny. Yeah, he talked about that. He said he saw the studios and I was like, do they look like you remember them? And he said, they look cleaner.
That's like good.
I know. I was surprised.
We've come a long way in terms of hygiene here at Radio K.
Right.
Thank you so much, Amy, and great job with your story.
Thank you.
Now in its 33rd year, the Minneapolis St. Paul International Music Film Festival is the biggest it's ever been, using its influence to ignite a love of film in Minnesota through inclusivity and the embrace of unfamiliar cultures and media, and also the support of often overlooked Minneapolis scene. I dropped by the box office, see what the fuss was about. I'm on my way to meet Eric Wilson and Jesse Bishop, two gentlemen instrumental in organizing one of the Twin Cities' most cultural media attractions.
Hey, Eric. Hey, good to meet you.
Come on. Too.
Above St. Anthony Main Theater, packages are rolling through the door, and the phone is ringing off the hook in the final moments of preparation for the three-week-long Minneapolis St. Paul International Film Festival.
So, Eric, we're in the 33rd year of the film festival. How has it changed over the years?
Well, I've been here for 4 years, and at least over that time, we've grown incredibly fast. I mean, we're up to 40,000 attendees over the 17 days. We've increased the number of films from just under 175 to over 250. I think we're all very proud of that, but I think there's still a long way that we can still grow, especially getting more students at the U involved.
The films can be gathered from anywhere, from distributors, other film festivals, or even the filmmakers themselves, from anywhere in the world. Although the different language is a bit of a giveaway, these films are certainly deviations from your typical Hollywood blockbuster.
I feel, for example, some of the Indian films that are in the program this year have a real stylized nature to them, and I think that's influenced by Bollywood as well as Hollywood's influence on Bollywood, but there's also a real independent voice coming out of India, so yeah, there's a lot of interesting stylistic differences, but cinema is kind of a universal format, so you can see where everyone's kind of influenced by each other, especially in this day and age when you can see a movie from any part of the world, in wherever you are in the world.
Eric and Jesse aren't just advising us to see these 250 films while they're in Minneapolis, but the entire country.
Many film festivals in the country, focus on American independent films, and there's nothing wrong with that, but our mission, as it has been, to present films that would otherwise never come to Minneapolis. And yes, we play some of the, bigger American indie titles, but, I mean, there are films that you'll see in this fest that do not have U.S. distribution, will not have U.S. distribution. This really is the one chance that you'll have to see these films.
It's almost like a double-edged sword, really, because, you have that experience of, the one-time thing, but you also, you don't get a chance to do it again. And so how are you making this as available to the public as possible?
That's a good question. I mean, we do have student tickets. We do discount rates for, groups around the cities.
And we really want everyone to feel comfortable coming down to the festival, whether it's at the St. Anthony Main Theater, which is the main venue, or our new screenings at Northrop Auditorium, and we actually do have a handful of 3D screenings at Walker Art Center. But we really want a wide variety of people of all ages, students of all walks of life coming down, because we think that there's something for everyone.
With so much content accessible to the public, the sense that film can be appreciated by all is evident. I stopped by one of the many parties occurring during the fest near St. Anthony, Maine, to witness the congregation of film lovers and creators alike.
Hey, I'm Ty West.
33-year-old horror film director, his latest, The Sacrament, played for the first time in Minneapolis this weekend.
I'm feeling pretty good. This is the tail end of my sort of festival tour. The movie comes out next month, so I'm just sort of wrapping it up and trying to hit all the cities I haven't seen yet. This is my first day here, but it's been good. And I like the sort of regional festivals. You know, I think in some bigger cities, people are a little bit like, yeah, we have a film festival. Whereas when you come to other cities, smaller cities, I think they're more appreciative of what they're doing. And so it's fun to come here, and everyone's excited to have you.
Minneapolis simply can't compare with the LA film scene, where West currently resides. In fact, you don't hear too much about the Minneapolis film scene at all. But Jesse assures me that it is there, and gradually making a name for itself.
I think it's quite robust, actually. You know, within our festival, so we have some 250 films, 50 of them, a fifth of them, are from Minnesota. So, and these are films that have been made in the past year. So I think it's really strong.
It may be slightly under the surface to a lot of people, but it's definitely not only burgeoning here, but already really strong.
So do you feel like staying in Minnesota is a viable option for an upcoming filmmaker?
Yes, stay in Minnesota, and we hope so. I mean, we want there to be a vibrant artistry here, for sure. I think it's worth it. And you know, artists have to create a lot of times on their own time, but we hope that eventually the economy will be such for that industry that they can be making movies as their sole, you know, job, essentially.
With the support of organizations and events such as the International Film Festival, the Minneapolis scene may well be able to rise in the ranks. So look out, Hollywood. This is Matt Curtis with CultureQ. Fiction is often seen as a medium used for escaping the real world, but creative works are not all about giving us shelter from everyday life. CultureQ reporter Parker Lemke attended the casting event at the Mall America to talk to comic fans about how one iconic web-slinger has impacted their lives and the lives of those around them.
Would you have what it takes to swing with Spider-Man?
Spider-Man does
whatever a spider can. A nationwide search for Spider-Man superfans came to Minnesota in 2014. Casting company Action Casting was on the lookout for extraordinary comic book hero enthusiasts to take part in a promotional tour for The Amazing Spider-Man 2, an upcoming superhero flick that Action Casting representative Marcus Clark described as an exciting affair.
It is an epic saga of Spider-Man defending New York from multiple villains this time around. What the people do know is Jamie Foxx is appearing in this one as Electro, and Paul Giamatti is appearing as Rhino. So I know there's a lot of excitement about the epic battle that's going to ensue.
Both he and casting director James Levine have seen this enthusiasm across the country.
They've kind of brought the show to us. They come out in costume, they come out and they're acrobatic, and they're completely dedicated, and a lot of them actually really live as Spider-Man.
This is only a partial exaggeration, as I found out when I spoke to Jonathan Palmer, a Spider-Man fan of over 30 years, who dedicates his love of comic books to a worthy cause.
I run Hallie K. Brown Community Center. We have a program called Project Superhero that utilizes superheroes in comic books, and so we work with at-risk kids who may not have positive role models in their lives, and we talk with them about the concepts you see in comic books like Spider-Man, about never giving up, about always doing the right thing, and we give them free comic books and talk with them about the life lessons, and it's one of the things that really kind of resonates with the kids, and the kids come back back each month. We have comic book clubs across the Twin Cities. And so it's a really engaging way to get kids, and it's an easily accessible format that they can find. So we really like doing that.
He describes Spider-Man as a particularly relatable character.
Spider-Man's kind of the everyman character. He represents the common man. He struggles against great odds, but still has everyday problems. Can't make the rent, has girl problems, all those kind of things. And being able to keep pushing ahead, never giving up, is what makes him somebody that people can relate to in such a way.
These qualities make him an engaging character for kids to latch onto, which is why Spider-Man fan Suk Visgard joined the gathering of comic fans dressed for the part.
I've been doing costuming since I got out of high school in 93. I am now almost 40. The reason why I do the characters I do is for all the kids. I do birthday parties, I go to events, I do basically anything. I've gone to where six kids are, the hospitals and whatnot. I've done that.
And how long has he been a Spider-Man fan?
1978. Like the TV show, I used to watch the 1960s cartoon, but that was a rerun because I was born in 74. So I've been into it since then. Comics, everything.
The 1960s Spider-Man cartoon is also what helped hook Jonathan Palmer, and later his daughter, on the character.
Oh my gosh, that's what I grew up on. I mean, and when my daughter was born, my daughter's 11, when she was born, I started her on that. Because it's a great cartoon, it's got action, nobody ever gets hurt in the thing. I mean, they have guns and they fire, and nobody ever gets shot. And Spider-Man does these impossible things of making like fan boats out of webbing and stuff like that. So it's great for kids, it's a great way to introduce them to the character, but it's also a great thing because it's not as violent as some other cartoons.
And it has that very catchy theme song.
Oh, I've got it on my iPhone. So yeah, no, it's right on my iPod playlist. I love it.
Although being child-friendly is perfectly good for a cheesy action cartoon, Suk Visgard is pleased that the recent Spider-Man movies are taking on a grittier style.
What I like about the Amazing Spider-Man films is that when he gets hit, you actually see him bruise up, where in the first, like, Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, when he took a beating, he never was bruised or nothing. He was, like, still fine. I think they're actually capturing a lot of really good detail.
And I assume you're excited for the second movie?
Oh, totally. I can't wait to see it. Seeing Electro is just awesome. Seeing Rhino, I can't wait for that too, because this is one character I've really wanted to see on screen, and now they've done it.
Palmer is also pleased with how his childhood hero has been portrayed in the new films.
The action sequences look like they were right out of the comic books. All the stuff that I read growing up was in the acrobatic scenes that he had, and the same kind of struggles that he was. Very much a little akin more to the Ultimate Spider-Man line, but very much in the Spider-Man theme.
The five Spider-Man fans chosen by Axon Casting will be given a special behind-the-scenes look inside the making of The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is set to debut in theaters on May 2nd, 2014. And whether he's picked or not, Palmer enjoyed being able to share his love for an iconic hero.
I was real excited for it. They asked me some fun questions, and I got to talk about what my love of Spider-Man is and how much of a geek I am.
For Culture Q, I am Parker Remke.
You've been listening to Culture Q on Radio K, airing every Sunday at 6 p.m, bringing you all the stories from the Twin Cities you won't hear anywhere else. Tonight you heard the voices of Matt Curtis, Parker Lemke, and Amy Friedman. Our producers are Amy Friedman, Parker Lemke, and Kate Bolin. Our music reporter is Nathan Gurdis. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek. And I'm Matt Curtis. You can find us on RadioK.org, PRX, and iTunes. Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. See you next Sunday at 6 p.m. And thank you for listening.
Stay. Assalamu alaikum.